Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
It doesn't matter who you are or what you have, life can be pretty hard. Without a healthy mind, it's even harder. Check out online therapy with BetterHelp.com/Duncan and be on your way to a little more ease. Thanks, BetterHelp.
I got fat from eating cereal late at night, big bowls of cereal. I got fat from eating cereal late at night, my darling.
I Got Fat from Eating Cereal by Karen Ansley, a magnificent album. Check her out. She's on Spotify. With us here today is a brilliant human being. You probably know him from Harmontown. He's a writer on Rick and Morty. If you're a fan of the Creepshow movie, then you must watch his episodes of Creepshow on Shudder. Everybody, please welcome to the DTFH, Rob Schraub. Rob, thank you so much, man. I'm sorry. I hated having to move that around. I'm so glad to see you, man.
It's really no big deal. I mean, like, I'm in between seasons on Rick and Morty right now, so my schedule is pretty open. I'm just kind of like working on the new house and trying to write a feature script and helping out Kate with her scripts and stuff. But so my schedule is pretty liquid. Pretty fluid.
Is this the first house you've ever owned?
Yes, this is. I lived in an apartment since, like, I moved here, moved out to Los Angeles from Wisconsin in 1998 with Harmon, drove in my Honda Civic cross country, and lived in a house together on Norton. Do you remember Norton over by Koreatown?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so we were over there. And that's where we came up with Monster House, in that house. And then I moved into Jeff Davis's, our mutual friend Jeff Davis's, Jeff Brian Davis's old apartment.
Wow.
And I stayed there from 99 till, like, this May, last May. And
wow.
So I was there longer. It's weird. I've lived there longer than any place in my life. Even like growing up in Mayville, Wisconsin, like I moved out when I was 18. So I was there like 20 years, 21 years maybe.
Wow.
And so it was the pandemic that did it. Like, because I was like, I can't. Because you at the beginning we were like, I don't know, this could be it. And I'm like, I don't want to die in this apartment. I always said I was going to move. And I kept putting it off. And finally, we were shopping around. We found this great old school, like, 1980s house that is just gorgeous. It looks like something out of, like, either E.T. or Poltergeist.
Man, that apartment you had, though, was I
good.
Get that. I could see how that was a complete, like, honey trap. I could see why you would never want to leave, because that
it was a womb. People, like, said you go there and it's like the all the couches are cushy and, you know, it's like, you know, candle lit. It was a definite, like, very, very comfort place. But I mean, like, it was huge. It was a big place, you know, and the rent was, like, controlled, so my rent didn't go up for like about 10-15 years. So it was, but there was, like, you know, like, only one parking space, had to share, like, washing machines and stuff like that, and just you just like, I'm a little too old to share a dryer.
Oh, I didn't realize you were sharing a dryer, man.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm the one, like, I, by the way, I think you know this. I we bought our first house too. So we're both new homeowners.
When did you move? Now, sorry. Like, it's like one day I looked on Instagram and you were not in California anymore. Like, when did you exactly move?
We bailed.
We've gone over this a million times.
I'm trying to remember. When was the at the peak of fire season this last summer is when we split. It was like, I can't remember the exact date. I'd have to look it up. But it was like, I don't know. Things had gotten to be the most hyper-apocalyptic I've ever seen L.A. And we just realized, like, we can't have kids here right now. And we were renting this compound that was like perfect, but...
Oh yeah, I love that place. That was nice.
Yeah, it was cool, man. But we just had to like split. But this isn't like, it's number one, the idea that you and Harmon making this pilgrimage to LA.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to like diverge from talking about houses, but do you remember the conversation that spawned y'all deciding to take that trip?
Well, you know, like moving, we talked about it for years. Like, you know, like Harmon and I were in a improv troupe called the Dead Ale Wives, and we had dreams of moving out to the West Coast. Plus, I had my comic book, and I wanted to make that into... I was hoping that would be, like, the next Tick, the next Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This was, like, 95 or whatever. And we got like option to be made, like Scud got option to be made into a movie. And so we were like, wow, this is it. Let's move so we can be close to the making of the movie, not knowing that everybody gets their shit option.
Yeah.
You know, and then, and there's just no guarantee that you're going to go any further than just an option. And so when we moved out, everybody was like, why did you move out? Oh, to help make the movie. And so we were quickly like dismayed and like going, oh shit, we moved out here and like the movie's like kind of falling apart. Like now what?
Wow.
And so I dug into the comic book, but I was really not feeling it anymore. And then Dan really wanted to write and I wanted to get into animation and, We collaborated on a feature spec script and got it sent out and luckily got an agent, you know, like that's and to bring it back to Monster House, that's how we got our first writing gig.
Wow.
You know, just writing Monster House for Zemeckis. So we got super lucky.
Is there anybody in LA who doesn't say they've got, isn't that the only thing that can happen is you have to get lucky too? Like it's, you know, obviously y'all didn't just get lucky. You're both amazing writers and you're both super funny and you're both like disciplined. But, and so that's the part you can take care of. But that's the crazy thing about that business is it's
we were prepared. That's the thing, is luck is opportunity mixed with preparation.
Right.
We worked on the comic book. We understood movies. We had a vocabulary of movies. We also had like a just an idea for, we wanted to make old school like Spielberg, Goonies, Monster Squad, schlock, sci-fi horror fantasy stuff, and also we were able to be funny too. So we were able to be, and we had like performing experience. So when you go in and pitch, you're kind of acting out the movie. So we worked really good, and we work really good off of each other. So, and Dan's like very heady and really good with dialogue and structure, and I'm more visual and an idiot. So we really balanced each other out. So once we got into the room and we kind of understood like what the target was, it was, we got lucky, you know, but we were prepared, you know, did like several years of comic books and knew what we liked and knew what we had a really, I think we really understood what our voices were, like, as far as creators. And I think that took a lot of time in the comic book. We'd spent all that time in doing comic books, creating that voice, and on stage doing the Dead Alewives. And then so when we landed in front of Robert Zemeckis, just by chance, we were prepared. So that's what I would say is any advice to anybody reading is like, how do I get lucky like you? It's like, just work on your craft until like the chance meeting.
Yeah.
At the bus stop, at the restaurant, waiting for a table, and somebody goes, "Ah, you know, I really wish I knew somebody who had an idea about a monster house." You can you're locked and loaded. So that's the thing, is just like hone your craft until fate steps in. And if you're honing your craft, I believe in magnetism. I'm sure you do too. You know, like, it's just like, I attract positivity, I attract good luck, I attract opportunity. If you use that as your mantra, if you use that as your creative visualization, it kind of magically shows up. And I know for sure that if you do the opposite, that magically shows up as well. I keep forgetting that.
God, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can like cast, you can curse yourself just by like, being just saying shitty things about yourself, which is a really weird habit that it seems like people are just getting into any kind of creative endeavor. I've noticed if you ask them about what they're doing, they'll usually be very self-effacing with it. It's weird because.
Were you like this when you got your house? You know, like when people went, "Oh, wow, look at how beautiful your house is." The first you go, "Yeah, you know, we got super lucky. The deal was really good. We paid a lot less for what it's worth." Yeah. Or, it's not perfect, but somebody gives you a huge compliment and then you got to go, "Yeah, but it's not perfect." Yeah. Instead of going, "No kidding. This is the best house in the world. We totally deserve this. We worked hard for it. And we knew what we wanted." You always cut yourself down. And I do it. I did it this morning.
You did?
You know, you always kind of like find a way to go, I'll try to get to work today. I probably won't, though. But, you can never be on your side. And I think, I don't know why that. Why do you think that is? Why do you think we do that? Do you think it's because
you don't want to seem too puffed up?
Yeah.
You don't want to seem like, you know, it's like there. I think there. It's number one. I think one of the real problematic things outside of the metaphysical possibility that it's going to like amplify some horrible thing in your life just via some like language magic is it's fucking dishonest. It's like if. You know, a lot of the times when I found myself being self-effacing, I don't really believe what I'm saying. So you're lying. It's like, that to me is like the core of the thing. Is like,
do you think you do that because if you're talking to somebody who, like, say, doesn't have a house, and you're like, I've got a lot of headaches, you know. Are you doing that because you don't want that other person to feel bad? Do you think that's part of it?
I mean, yeah. And by the way, like anytime, like I've rented, I'm 47. I rented my entire life. So it's like when I'm renting, you know, if I'm like marveling at somebody's house, which I would do if someone had a fucking house, you're like, oh my God.
Seems impossible.
How? This is so far out of my reach.
Yeah.
So you never want to feel like someone's trying to like protect your feelings because you're a renter. You know, I think it's always better to just be like, yeah, it's awesome.
You got to do this. This is the thing, is like, instead of like going, got a lot of stuff to do yet. It wasn't perfect, but you know, it's like, no, you need to. I mean, Harmon would give me shit, but I kind of secretly wanted somebody to go, "What are you doing? What are you doing? You're living half a life. Yeah. Get out there and do something." Yeah, you could take a chance. It might not work out, but you'll just adjust. You'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Just get out of there. Otherwise, you're going to die in that apartment.
Right.
And I think the pandemic was like the best thing that kind of happened to me. I know it was a tragedy and a lot of people died, but I mean, like, it worked. It really kind of put my life in perspective of like, all right, well, what if I never see my folks again? What if I, like, what if I get sick? What if Kate gets sick? This is it. These right. are the last walls I will see. These yeah. is the last home. And I would be unsatisfied with that kind of an ending. So when the minute it was like we got vaccinated, we were like, let's just start looking. And we wrote down exactly what we wanted. This is another proof of magnetism working for us. Wow. It's like we got out on paper. What do we want? We want a pool. What do we want? I want a workshop. What do we want? We want our own offices. What do we want? Two levels. What do we want? We want a mid-century modern, you know, yeah. late 70s, early 80s house that doesn't look like a box or something out of a Crate and Barrel catalog. We want this. We want, and we got it all. We got everything. We got everything that was on that list. And yeah. I think, and we got it quickly too.
Man, that's incredible. It's a good reminder for me. I keep forgetting that thing, which is like, if you just ask for it, a lot yeah. of the time, you'll get it. And yeah. something about that is so easy to forget. But that being said, it's like the other thing, you know, when people are like, are asking about like having a house, like how do you not tell them like, oh my, you don't understand. It's the biggest pain in the fucking ass that you yeah. have ever had. Like it really is. And then I feel like a dick for complaining because it's like, holy shit, I have a house. But also it's like, once you have a house, it's just, when I was a renter, it's like something goes wrong. It's so easy. You just let yeah. the landlord know something's gone wrong. You just, and it gets fixed, you yeah. know, but not when, like anything you want done when you have a house, it's just like, forget, like it's, I don't know if you're having a hard time with that, but
oh, no. It's like we moved in and within the first, I don't want to say first week, but first couple of weeks, air conditioning stopped breaking.
Oh, no.
It stopped working. It broke. Stopped breaking. And it was like at the middle of the summer. And we're out in the valley here. So it was like 92 at midnight.
Oh, my God.
And we were just like, I can't handle this. This is it. And so we had to replace the air conditioning,
ooh.
Which is like, that's a huge chunk of money. That's yes. like a just check. Because there's, it's just two, it's like a huge, huge chunk. And then like, oh, hot water doesn't work. Okay, we don't have hot water. So now we got to fix that. You know, it's just like little things like that you got to kind of navigate around. And then the things that you don't know when we visited the house like a couple of times, but you're not around for, oh, there's a horse ranch. Isn't that lovely? Like across the way. That's great. Oh, what they don't tell you is that every 7 o'clock, the tractors come out until the backyard and stuff like that. And it's not like insanely loud like Los Feliz was, but it's not quite peaceful. Like absolutely quiet like you thought it would be.
Right.
And you're gonna go, okay, okay. So those are the things that you kind of like discover in the first couple of days of living there. But let me ask you a question. When you moved in, okay, that first night you moved in,
yeah,
and you're laying there in bed and it's dark. Were you kind of like, this is kind of creepy, or is this scary, or is this? Did you have any kind of right thing? Or
no. So with this house, weirdly, no, I didn't get any kind of like ghost vibes from it, and I entertained the idea that yeah. I can tell when a house is like haunted, right. or and I've have. This has happened a few times to me. Once I was shooting something for Drunk History, and it was in an Airbnb or some place they rented. And so I walked in and I got that feeling that I get when I'm in a house that people end up saying is haunted. And so the owner was there. And so I said to the owner, the house is haunted, huh? And the owner gave me this weird look, like, how'd you know? And, And the owner's like, there was the woman who used to own the house. They found her body under a working electric blanket. And she'd been under that thing for like a week, you know, just festering, cooking. Yeah. And then another house I lived at, same thing. I got the haunted vibe, but not just that. The first night we were in there, we're like laying on a mattress on the floor and like, just a, like, there's just this slam. And this like jug of water we had up on a counter just flown off. And then months after living there, the neighbor said, and who knows, maybe the neighbor's crazy, but the neighbor said to me, you know what happened in there, right? And I was like, what? And they wouldn't tell me. To this day, I have no idea.
A jug of water flew across and killed a man. That's the jug of water murder.
Yeah.
Something that happened, like, okay, so I'm from Milwaukee, and every once in a while, you know, I fly back, and Kate and I, we go visit my folks and stuff, and usually Kate's like, she'll take care of, like, she'll do like all the travel arrangements or whatever, and like, I'm gonna do it, I'll do it this time. Okay, so I found like a good deal. It's like, oh, I can rent a car and I can get a hotel and I can get like this really cheap. It says, you want me to look at it before? No, I got it, honey, don't take care. So we get off the plane in Milwaukee, and the cab picks us up and takes us to where like the car is and then the hotel is and stuff. And we're driving in, and I've lived in Milwaukee for, you know, like about like 6-7 years. And then we were driving into the, I'm like, I don't know where this is. This doesn't make any sense. Where are we? And then we pull up, and like, there's like a car pulls out in front of the cab, and like these gangbangers are like going, fuck you, man. And then like the taxi car's like, fuck you, I'll kill you, whatever. And we're like, oh shit, what is this? This neighborhood is like a little, this isn't what I thought this was gonna be. We pull into this kind of not, I wouldn't say nasty, but not altogether great hotel. And Kate's like, what did you do? And I go, it was a deal. I don't know, maybe get what you pay for. We get in there, we check our bags, and we go up to the hotel. And Kate walks in and goes, looks around the, and it's just, you know, it's not like the Hyatt, but it's a hotel room. And she just looks at it and she goes, I will not stay here.
Whoa.
There is a darkness in this building.
Fuck.
We're leaving. And I never did this ever before. I'm okay, grab the suitcases. Cause usually I'm like, oh, come on, let's just whatever. But I like, whatever you want, grab the suitcases, went down there. We were in the room for 2 minutes, went down to the front lobby and said, we're not staying here. I understand we already paid for the room. It's fine. And they're like, okay, all right. And I'm like, yep, we're not staying here. We jumped in a cab, drove, you know, like 20 minutes and went to the Hyatt. We were there, and it was a lovely place and we had a great time. And then I was like, huh, I'm going to check up the address of that hotel. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Used to be an apartment. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, that's where Dahmer killed all the people.
Are you fucking kidding me? I thought they raised Dahmer's place. Are you fucking kidding me?
Well, this was a while ago. This is a long time ago.
So this is before. Oh, my God. That is nuts.
Yeah.
So she picked up on all that horror that had happened there.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think that is? What's your theory on that? Like, what? I mean, like, you know.
I think certain people are like, are connected with certain vibrations. Kate, definitely. My wife, Kate, she is, when she feels something is off, she's always right about it. When she's always been kind of like, you're going to have a good day today. You're going to have a bad day today or whatever, you know, like, or just be careful out there. You know, like, there's always, she's really good at kind of being connected with the vibration or
but what, that's what I, what's so like, so you've got people like Kate, like clairvoyant or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But what, like in a place like that, like what do you, what is the vibration? Like what do you think, there's some like quantum residue or something in the place, or like what are they picking up on?
I can't help but think there must be when something, because usually people like wander around the world half not present.
Yes.
Not present. You're kind of like, oh, my mind is on what am I going to eat later on, or oh, this person isn't talking to me, or like, oh, I got this thing due or whatever, instead of like walking the dog or appreciating nature, or even when you're talking to somebody else, you've got your mind on a million things.
Yeah.
But when you're in a life and death, like somebody is squeezing the life out of you, you are present. You are present.
Yeah.
You are so present,
right?
Because you're like, oh my God, I have to, everything, every molecule, every atom of my body is now focused on this thing that is maybe going to kill me,
right,
or whatever. And if enough of that happens, I think that echoes. I think there's echoes. I don't know if it's ghosts or bad juju or whatever, but it's like there's like a vibration that goes out that is just like the same way we attract positivity, you know, like when somebody is like, especially like that last, you know, they say like a light bulb burns the brightest just before it burns out.
Ooh.
You know, like somebody
who's, I think Jeffrey Dahmer said that.
Yes. And he says, don't worry.
He said a light bulb burns the brightest, especially when it's burning someone's face, I think,
right,
is what he said.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know, man. I I've heard great theories on it. I've heard, like, on Coast to Coast, someone was speculating that time, everything's happening at once. Mm-hmm. So when you're in a place, you're actually like, it's not like there's a residue or there's a ghost, but it's like, time in some places, time dilates or is thinner, yeah, or whatever, and so like you're literally there when the event is happening, you know, and because everything is happening at once. That sounds like an insane idea. I think it's like, it would make sense that, you know, somewhere in us was the like, it would make, there's some evolutionary advantage to like picking up if one of your species has died in a place.
Well, I think animals are like that. I mean,
yeah,
like an animal will, like, they'll sense danger, like really, really, like they're, I mean, like even my pet, who is a domesticated creature, who is like most of the wildness has been taken out of it, that is still inside her makeup, her brain or whatever, that she'll be walking along and then all of a sudden she'll just like stop and go,
yeah,
that's weird or whatever. Like she'll see like huskies, she'll see like bigger dogs, she'll see like kind of like these hounds and things like that, and she'll be like, eh, whatever. But if she sees a coyote, she'll freak the fuck out. Nobody sat down and told her, is it okay? Like, that dog is okay. That is a coyote that will eat you. No one told her that.
Right.
So it's like inside there's like, and I think like maybe the coyote is like radiating, I'm starving, looking for something smaller,
yeah,
than me. I'm starving. I will kill somebody. It kills something that is smaller than me. And then like, but a domesticated dog doesn't radiate that. I don't know. Just a theory. I always, you know, it's interesting. Like you think all time exists at the same time, like I always kind of thought about what if like reality or time is like a cassette tape, and there's only so much reality, and so once you get to the end of it, you either flip it over or you record over it again. So you
know,
like, or you're recording over, like you remember when you would record even videotape,
yeah,
that there would still be a little bit of residual,
yeah.
Like you would hear like, oh, I could still hear like the song that I recorded over, or bits and pieces or video from the thing you recorded over would kind of percolate through and kind of share totally. The same space.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a way of rationalizing it, but that's
cool.
That's how I kind of put it together.
Oh my God. Head. The idea that we're like somehow stored on like some form of hard drive that is just like someone just recorded over like a previous universe or
yeah.
Whoa, that's so crazy, man. It's so weird. That's what the pyramids.
Time travel is just a tape recorder. You could fast forward and rewind as long as somebody hasn't recorded over your life yet.
Holy shit, that is so cool. Do you have, you know, this is like, I love Terrence McKenna, and that was one of his like talking points that he, when he was speculating about this thing called the singularity, that was his idea, is like that, you know, they're about to invent a time machine, and because it's a time machine, it's so powerful that all the and this is way before any of the shit we're going through happened, but you know, he just said as we get closer and closer to the invention of a time machine, or what's known as the singularity, same thing, that you can expect novelty events, as he put it, which is like shit's going to start happening that no one's ever seen before, that's so crazy that everyone's like, what the fuck? And that's going to start happening with like that with a hockey stick. It's like exponentially going. Like, so first you're just going to get like one, like, you know, one weird event, assassination of Abraham Lincoln, or, you know, these like rifts in history. Then Kennedy, and then blah, and then blah. And then next thing you know, it's like people are raiding the White House, and there's a fucking pandemic. And then during the pandemic, they start talking about UFOs, and all these things are like ripples radiating backwards through time from this time machine that we're all headed towards. You ever heard that idea before?
No, but I'm fascinated with all that kind of stuff. I did you ever read up on Tesla about how he possibly invented time travel or whatever? Yeah. Like there was this story. I'm going to get it all wrong, but maybe somebody will steer us in the right direction after listening to this. But like Tesla, like a friend of his, like, said, oh yeah, Tesla came over the other day and he looked freaked out, like his hair was a mess and he was just like not the same person, and just like, what happened, buddy? And he goes, oh, I did an experiment with electricity and it went wrong, and I accidentally saw past, present, and future all at the same time.
Oh wow.
And like just was like existed exactly like how you're saying, like time exists all at the same time. Ooh. And he had all these theories and wrote it down, and then after like he died, like the government came in and just took everything.
Yeah,
just took everything.
I know, but like that part is really weird. And then like, you know, I think the QAnon people got into this because somehow the person connected to scooping up Tesla's shit was like a relative of Trump.
Yeah, Trump's like great uncle or just uncle or something like that. And there was a theory going around like, oh, that's how Trump won. That's because he's a time traveler, and they said, and that's why his brain is all messed up, because time travel gives you like brain cancer or something like that. Like,
what?
That's why. Yeah. There's just all these theories that are just like really, you know, I go into the YouTube deep dives of conspiracy theory because I find them so entertaining, because they start off like so ridiculous that you're just like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
And then they'll say something that will go, okay. Yeah. What else you got? And then it's just equal parts ridiculous and equal parts probable. You know, like, it, you know, possibly probable.
Did you ever get into John Titor?
No, what's that?
Okay, this is great. That's one of the big time traveling conspiracy theories. Like, this guy started showing up on message boards claiming to be this time traveler called John Titor. And he... it was like the weirdest thing. He's He's traveling backwards in time. There's a civil war has happened in the United States, and I don't know. He needs this technology. He's trying to find like this old kind of computer that's got some kind of technology in it that they don't have in his version of the future. And what was cool about it was the details that he would give. The idea, basically, like, the idea was you don't really time travel as much as move into parallel universes that mm-hmm. are at different time scales than yours, but that are similar. And the further back you go, the further away you veer from your original timeline. So the idea was like, this fixes the problem of like killing your grandfather or whatever.
Right.
Because it's not your grandfather that you'd be killing. It's like some alternate reality version of your grandfather. But the other thing he talked about was like shit like how he was getting colds and stuff all the time here because his immune system wasn't set for the like viruses here and stuff. But, you know, it was definitely, I believe it was a fraud. And then, of course, and people, they're in the way they kind of figured it out was, I believe someone who was probably John Titor was like trying to protect the IP or something. Like something, you know, a time traveler would never do.
Yeah. That's interesting. I've never heard of that as a motivation coming back in time or to whatever parallel universe to get a bit of old technology.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I have this external drive that has all this really important information on it, but I don't have the cable that will connect
yes.
to my computer.
Yes.
Because they don't exist anymore. Like I bought like this old TV that on eBay, and it supposedly worked fine, but it got broken during in the mail, and I'm trying to just find a TV repairman, and everywhere I go they go, they don't have the parts. I could fix it, but I don't have, they don't make tubes anymore, they don't do any of that stuff. I can't, if you had the parts I could fix it for you, but I don't have the parts. They don't make them anymore.
Yeah,
so like those TVs will be gone. And I remember when I was doing the last like four issues of my comic book, because I took 10 years off in between like the last issue and then the last four, and I had the original covers and stuff were done on computer, but they were done on like zip discs, and like there was zip files and other we had all the discs, but we couldn't get them off the discs onto today's computer. So we had to go to eBay, and then we were online trying to connect one thing to another, to another, to another, to an adapter that would get into a computer that we have. And it's just, it's, if you go long enough, you're not going to be able to like access some of this technology if it only exists in this one thing. So it's like, how would you get it off of, you know, those hard disks?
Oh yeah.
Like say you've got like, well, I've got a contract on here that says that you'll give me $1 million in a year, but I can't get it off of this disc.
Yeah.
How do I do it? Well, I got to find somebody who knows how to do this, and then I need to get that off of that system and put it on my new system so I can duplicate it and share. It's just, it's a cautionary tale to back up all your stuff. In new technology too.
Yeah, because, right. That, I mean, this is so we rented this awesome mid-century house in Pasadena years ago. We just found this place. It was kind of dilapidated, but who cares? We're renting it.
Yeah.
Beautiful place. But it had like an old school 50s electrical system in there. It had that thing that some mid-century houses have where like above the bed, there were these buttons you could press to turn off all the lights in the house.
I love that shit, yeah.
Fucking cool. But you know, they were trying to be futuristic back then, so they were using what I think back then was considered a really advanced like way of wiring your house. But it didn't, you know, it was like Flash or whatever. You know what I mean? It didn't take off. It became obsolete. And so, you know, what would happen is like lights on the house in the house would just stay on. You couldn't turn them off. The system wouldn't work. And we got an electrician who came and looked at the circuitry and Lynn just shook his head and was like, yeah, no one's going to be able to fix this. Like,
oh,
this,
man, that sucks.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because it's like you have all these, like, you have all these storage mechanisms laying around, you know, that are becoming increasingly obsolete. And so there's all these, like, data extinction events that are happening where we're losing gigabytes of God knows what, just because it's like either they're not storing the material in the right place, because there's no point, it costs too much to store film, you know, and so they're just letting it rot, or they don't have the machines that can run it anymore. So it's interesting how much stuff is just blinking out.
Yeah, and it's not like the old days where it's like, oh, a photo album. I can open up, I can see, oh, this is what grandma looked like when she got married. This is like, this is my mom and dad when they were little kids and stuff. Like, it's like this obsolescence is happening faster and faster. And people are like going, oh, I got a million pictures on my phone. It's not precious until it's gone.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, what if you don't have it hooked up to your iCloud like I do? And like, it's just like, oh, your phone is broken. Okay, so now, like, 5 years of my life or 3 years of my life is just gone.
Gone.
I can't resurrect that. I can't open up a book and look at, like, oh, this is, you know, this is all this stuff. You know, I mean, like,
yeah, it's crazy.
You got, like, Instagram and Facebook and stuff like that, where, you know, you can look back at that stuff, but,
you know, all of so much that we have, like, discovered, or that we've learned, all the data sets, everything is being stored on devices that theoretically could in a second get completely wiped out by a solar flare. And we just, anything that isn't in a book, it's just gone. And that, to me, that's like, of all the settings for some kind of movie, or, you know what I mean? That's a cool, I would love to see that version of the world, like, 10 years after a solar flare has just zapped everything.
Yeah. Erased, like, every hard drive.
Every hard drive.
Everybody's set back to one.
Yeah. Because we would be so fucked, man. Like, like, we are, most of us don't know how to do anything, you know, or specialize. So we don't know, like, how to, but, you know, to imagine a world where all that just goes away, like, how quickly we would probably just revert back to, I don't know, like, the 1800s or something, right?
Yeah,
that's what happened.
I think I'm curious, like, how quickly that would happen. Would that happen over, like, a couple of decades or a couple of months?
I think a couple of months. I think it happens fast. I think we just, you know, like those, you know, a pig gets, if like a domestic pig gets loose, and it will mutate really quickly. It, like, grows hair and gets big and fucking weird, like, something gets activated in its DNA. So, and I think with humanity, when things get, like, apocalyptic, we quickly mutate into very dangerous creatures.
Yeah. I think that's a survival thing. Like, your brain, like we were talking about, do you sense danger? Like, you can go, okay, now it's like, you know, I'm a complete wimp and everything, you know, never been in a fight in my life, you know, got my ass kicked a bunch of times. But if the world went crazy and it was like, I would hope that something would snap inside me, that it would be like, okay, well, now it's fight or flight moment, you know, like, are you going to... Because you're protected by society. You're like, well, I'm not going to die. You know, I'm not going to get killed. But when you're in a situation where it's like, okay, now every day is a fight for survival. I wonder if like, just people like myself would just be killed off right away, or would we snap and turn, you know?
Or even worse, would we become, and I say we because I'm in that club too, man, but it's like, well, I don't know how to fight. You know what I mean? I'm going to do. But I don't know so much that we would be killed as much as there's like this, like, grim possibility that we would become slaves.
You know,
I don't think they, like, it's necessarily like, because why would you murder labor, your labor force. You know what I mean? Like you might, or I guess your organs might get harvested or something like that, but.
Are they like, I want your wife. Yeah, I think I'm going to have your wife now and your house. So so we'll get rid of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or worse, they just kick you out and I live in the backyard.
Or worse, it's just like they do the exact same thing, but in some kind of like post-apocalyptic manipulative way, you know? Yeah. They're like, I really like you. I'm going to call you Lightning. You know what I mean? And your wife's beautiful, but we got to give up the old ways. Yeah. We got to give up the old ways, Lightning.
That's awful. That's awful because that's how it would happen.
That's how it happened. It's like, we can't do it like we used to do it.
Yeah.
That causes trouble in a community. Monogamy. Right. You know? Or like, what is it David Koresh said? He told everybody he's going to take the burden of sex for them. And he started fucking their wives.
Yeah. How does a person go, oh, thank God. Thank God. Thank God you're going to be fucking my wife instead of me.
Starry-eyed. You got to be pretty starry-eyed, man. It's like just your, I don't know. I mean, like you have to be like, well, either you have to be super into it or you have to be just completely.
Have you seen The Mist, the Frank Darabont version of Stephen King story?
Yes, I did. And read the story. What's that?
Were you a fan?
No.
You weren't a fan.
Okay. I'm a fan of the Stephen King story, and I'm a snob, man, with it when it comes to like any kind of translation of Stephen King stuff. Like, for example, the new Stand miniseries, or relatively new, it's pretty great, if you ask me.
I haven't checked it out.
Oh, it's good. Seen it. Yeah. The one before, it's cheesy as fuck. It's the Randall Flagg character looks like he could, I don't know, play saxophone or something. You know, he doesn't seem like a... He doesn't seem like the Antichrist, but so, excuse me, the novella, The Stand, that Stephen King did. Did you read that?
I haven't read it, and I haven't seen.
I'm sorry, not The Stand, The Mist.
The Mist. I haven't read it. I'm a big fan of the movie, though. I did like the movie.
Okay, if I had just seen the movie, I bet I would like the movie.
Right.
If I hadn't read the.
Very quickly, the reason that I brought it up is because of like it's a microcosm of society breaking down, and how people are like, if you get enough people afraid, they'll go to anybody that will come to that will provide a solution, and it becomes like, oh, God is wants us to sacrifice your son, and that's the only way we're going to survive, and everybody's like. Who, like, a couple of days ago would never do that, or like going, I'm so scared, let's try it.
Yep.
Let's sacrifice this boy, you know, like that kind of stuff was very palpable to me, very terrifying to me. It's like that, the monster stuff and the tentacles and shit like that, that's all cool and everything, but like the stuff that really made me go, oh shit, I'm with that father going, they're gonna. This entire store of people is going to try to kill my son, and I'm going to have to fight to the death to get out of here.
He caught it. He captured it. He captured the thing that a lot of people are feeling right now, and it's it's like, because to me, like to go back to like the pig mutating thing, it's like when you see these people who are really overwrought over like masks, or the vaccine, or whatever, and now there's all kinds of videos. Of them at like school meetings and stuff.
Yeah.
What's weird about it to me is not so much they're protesting like putting masks on kids. I get that, and it's a scary time. I get people being freaked out. What's weird to me is the similarity in their affectation. You know what I mean? They're like all the way down to like the way they're lilting their voice, and like. A lot, the label that has been applied to that when it happens in a woman is like a Karen, right?
Yeah.
But why are they all the same? Why are they, you know, it's weird that they all have the same way of talking, the same cadence, the same, you know what I mean? They're all going crazy in a similar way. That's what's strange. You think people would go nuts in different ways, but it's the it's so strange.
It's a different kind of virus, you know. It's like they're afraid of a virus, and so like this personality virus starts taking over. That's an interesting take on a zombie movie, that where it's like you're not like Living Dead zombie, you know, whatever, but you're like you turn into this same personality type that is like against like reason and is just like I'm gonna pay more attention to that, but that is really frightening.
Creepy, man. And like they're it's just strange. I don't know if it's like maybe they're going on the same message boards or maybe they're watching the same videos.
Well, why would that change their voice? Why would they?
You know, in the way like, you know, very, very social, like fashion. It's like fashion, you know, so people start dressing the same way. Maybe they're like seeing videos or people talk. I don't know. But my theory has definitely been, it's some kind of mental contagion.
Right.
As far as zombie movies go, I mean, to me, the thing that's way scarier than people turning into the undead or people becoming cannibalistic and diseased and like kind of superhuman would be just a general disintegration in the sanity of your species. Yeah. You know, watching everyone or most people, watching the same thing that happened in the grocery store, in the mist, happen historically, which is fascism, I guess, right? Like,
yeah,
suddenly it's not the kid they're talking about sacrificing. Suddenly people are like, you know what the problem is, right? It's Jewish people. That actually happened historically. And like, and, you know, you hear that when it's coming from, like, you know, 20 people, and you're like, crazy-ass people, right? But then that spreads a little bit. And then it spreads a little bit more and more and more. And then suddenly you're the one who seems crazy, you know? That shit is nuts.
You put people in a kill-or-be-killed situation where they just want the target off their back. You know, they just, like, go, as long as it's not me being sacrificed, or as long as it's not me being rounded up, let's get that off. I think people change pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, when the power goes out and you can't call 911, you know, like, you were not a fan of the movie. What was different about the novella that you thought was missing from the movie?
So for everyone who hasn't seen or read these, spoiler alert. Skip ahead a little bit. So the ending of
the ending. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause the ending of the novella, it ended like, even though you could say the ending of The Mist was disturbing and ended bad, there was this sense of like, things are going to go back to normal. Right. You know, whereas the Stephen King version of it, it doesn't end like that. Like, shit's done.
Yeah.
They're fucked and it's done. And so there's like and also, you know, you just can't replicate, you know, the description of some of these like shambling, massive, giant fuck. He didn't do a bad job.
Yeah.
Replicating it, obviously. And I don't mean to say the most obvious thing, which is like books generally are better than movies. You know what I mean? But still, it's like, how do you, I don't care what kind of computer genius you are, you're not going to be able to replicate something that's so giant. It's like legs go up into the clouds and like swarms of like pterodactyl creatures are like nesting in its fucking torso and flying out. You know, he just really captured the like the whatever this world was that had leaked in. Also, man, the just the slow burn of the thing. I'll tell you another thing I didn't like about the Darabont. And again, I like a lot of stuff he does.
Yeah.
Here's another thing I don't like. Just, and this is all my own personal opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't like the device of having the dead animal or the murdered animal in the beginning of a movie. You know what I mean? Like,
what part is that?
In the very beginning, there's like a dead dog and a soldier thing that happens. Like, and
that's
so,
not in it. That's not in that.
I'm pretty sure it is. The very beginning of The Mist.
I just watched it. There's no dead dog.
I'm telling you, man. I'm gonna, like, it's the very beginning. It's that soldier's running through the woods. There's like a dead animal in the beginning of it. I'm almost positive, Rob. I'll go back and look.
I just watched it twice. Okay. I watched it twice last week.
I'm going to feel freaked out. Maybe there's a new version.
We're talking about two different movies.
Hold on.
No. We can't be talking about it.
It's the same movie. Maybe I'm mixing. No, it's very possible. I'm just merging movies.
Is it possible that it's in the book? And not in it, but you like the book. There's no dead. Because I would have a problem with that too. The beginning of The Mist starts off with the electrical storm and the guy painting the picture.
Okay, listen.
Unless there's a director's cut that I have not seen.
It must. It's a different. So maybe they fixed it, man. Because I just Googled Mist dog death because I was feeling crazy. The Mist showrunner explains why the dog had to die. A dog is brutally murdered in the first couple minutes of the adaptation's first episode. So,
this is the TV series.
Yes.
I'm talking about the Frank Darabont movie, the movie.
Oh, wait a minute.
I haven't seen the TV series.
Hold on. You know what happened is I got the movie and the TV series mixed up in my head.
Right. The TV series is good. I'm completely confused because
I've seen them both and I can't remember which is which now. So
the movie that I like, which is The Mist, is this. I would have a problem with the dog being brutally murdered too, because I'm like going, why? You can make up anything. Why? The reason you're killing off a dog or an animal is a very emotionally manipulative thing, because like it's. Because we get triggered by pet death.
Yes, or baby death. That's the other version of it. You open up with a kid getting killed.
Yeah.
Or a dog getting killed.
Yeah, and so I find that manipulative, and I don't like that too. And you could avoid it easily if you took the time and be a little bit more clever, or just choose not to do that story. But the beginning of the movie is him painting the picture. There's a storm. They go downstairs, and then the tree busts into the house and destroys his painting. And then he's got to go into town to get some supplies to cover up the window. And that's what leads him to the grocery store.
Yes.
But like all the best part of it is the character development and the slow burn of like, shit, the doom is happening. And the ending, I'm like, oh, okay. Kate said it best. It's like, oh, and we're going to talk about the ending again, if you want to skip ahead of this too, is that, oh, if somebody is going to do something really horrible, like, you know, like kill, you know, somebody you love in order to protect them from a horrible death.
Yes.
The very next beat is going to be the army coming out of the smoke going, wow, if you just would have waited like 5 minutes, you would have, everything would have been fine. Like it's I find manipulative as well.
No,
but I mean, look, we're storytellers. Everything is manipulative.
Right. That's true. Everything's manipulative, but if you're going to manipulate, just try to come up with a new way to manipulate. Like, any time I'm sitting down for a horror movie and it's like a fucking dead kid up front. Like when Aaron was pregnant,
we wanted
to watch a horror movie. And so I picked out this horror movie, just looked cool. And like within the first 10 minutes, it's not just a baby getting killed. It's an entire nursery of babies.
What movie is this, so I can avoid it?
It was on Netflix. I can't even remember the name. I couldn't finish it because, like, you know, it's this demon is eating babies, or a nurse got possessed, I think, and it's like using a scalpel to kill babies or something.
Oh,
and,
my God. No, no,
and
no.
And
no.
Aaron, who's like about to have, you know, we're like a month away from her giving birth, is looking at me like, and she says, why did you do this to me? And starts crying. I'm like, I didn't know. I had no fucking idea that there was a scene of
it's just too easy. There's a movie which I actually recommend. Edgar Wright actually recommended this movie. It's Who Can Kill a Child is the name of the movie. Sometimes it's referred to as like the third Children of the Damned movie.
Cool.
But it's in color. And it's a beautiful movie, and it all takes place on the island. And it's basically like this couple, this young couple, one's pregnant, the woman, Duncan. The woman's pregnant.
What?
And yeah, I know. Edgar Wright. So it goes to they wind up on this island. I don't know by on purpose or by chance or whatever. They wind up on this island, which is seems deserted, but that it's just inhabited by children that are all murderers. They're all shit. Like psychological. They're just like freaked out. They're just killer children.
Yeah.
And it's the two of them trying to survive a horde of children. And it's like, why couldn't you defend yourself? It's like, well, who could kill a child is the thing.
Oh, wow.
Now the reason I want to warn anybody that's going to go, well, that sounds interesting. I'd like to see that. If you watch this movie, skip over the credits.
Oh, no.
Because the credits, for some reason, the filmmaker decided, like, let's use footage. I believe it was from World War II.
Oh, come on.
Black and white footage of burying child corpses.
Oh, just what?
Like, and it's just, like, over and over and over again.
On.
And it's all grainy. And it's all real. It's, like, documentary footage. It's not faked. It's, like, it's and, like, I was watching it with Steve Agee. And we're, like, going, Jesus Christ, the movie hasn't even started yet. This is whatever. And, like, Agee's texting Edgar going, how the fuck? Why did you do this to us? This is terrible. Oh, my God. And then, and I'm like, and it just watch after the credits the movie. And we skipped ahead, watched the movie. And the movie's actually really, really, it's shot beautifully.
Oh,
the
cool.
Color is like that old kind of 70s, early 80s, just like
hell yeah.
Grainy, but just really kind of like the blues are really blue and the reds are like red. It's really, really, really a beautiful looking movie. And but the kids are creepy as fuck, and you believe the terror. But I recommend the movie if you skip over the horrible, irresponsible.
Yeah, don't do that.
Credits.
Don't do that. We
opening title sequence. Just irresponsible.
Don't
I don't
do
know
it.
Why. And it has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. I don't know why somebody didn't say, hey, maybe, you know, white titles on black. We don't need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't need that.
We don't need this.
Yeah. Why? Why? I would love to know their reasoning.
I don't know. But Who Could Kill a Child, sometimes referred to as Island of the Damned, I believe.
That, as soon as we get our internet back, I'm going to watch.
Oh, by the way, so you're how are you doing this if your internet is...
I'm at my studio.
You're at your studio.
Yeah.
So you have a house and a studio.
Yes, because I have kids, so it's too loud.
Right.
Now, Rob, listen. I want to ask you, this is the only real question I have for you for the whole time. I'm sorry to ask you. We've already done an hour. Do you have a second longer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got as long as you want.
Okay. So here's something I've been wondering. I feel like I already know what you're going to say, but if you look back at like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, if you look back at Rosemary's Baby, you know, the classic vintage horror movies of the past, maybe even Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, though, and then you look at a lot of the modern horror movies that are coming out right now, do you think something, I know it just makes you sound like just an old man.
Yeah.
But are horror movies like, is it impossible to recreate the horror movies of the past? Like, is that over? Was there like a golden age of horror?
I think, I mean, like the 80s in particular, there was a lot of stuff going on. Like, special effects came of age in the 80s. And so like, and also like a lot of independent horror movies came of age in that, like, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre being like one of them,
yeah,
going into the 80s or whatever. So you had like your Sam Raimi's, like, let's go out with our friends and make like a movie in the we'll make a horror movie,
yes,
because that's a genre that is proven to make money, you know, as opposed to doing a comedy. Let's do that. So you have somebody like Sam Raimi who's like, I want to do comedy, But I know if I make a horror movie, it has a chance of being picked up,
right,
distributed, and getting me out there. So you have somebody who has a good sense of humor, who's actually really, really creative and very experienced, and has got like a group of people that will back him up, and they make Evil Dead. And
yeah,
it is, there is a glee to the horror. I would say Creepshow has a glee,
yes,
to the horror. I would say Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 has a glee to,
yeah,
the horror. We're watching people, like, we're horrifying you, but we're all kids, you know, sneaking downstairs. Our parents are having a dinner party, and we're watching this movie. We probably shouldn't. You know, I think that's also is like those Joe Dantes, those John Landises, the Toby Hoopers, who were the monster kids of like the 50s and 60s,
yes,
grew up, and now they're making movies.
Yes.
And so those monster kids grew up with like Frankenstein and Wolfman,
right,
and Gillman, and they just, we want to do that too, but we're going to do The Howling. We're going to do American Werewolf in London. So
yeah,
there's just a glee, you know, these, we're watching people live their dreams, and that I feel like the movies of the 80s, especially any kind of genre stuff, and mostly like low budget horror, what they didn't have in money, they had a lot in style.
Yes.
You look at Evil Dead 2, every shot is like, what, every camera move is, holy cow. Everything,
yes,
is, they didn't have a huge set, they had a cabin, but every shot is just like something inventive and new.
Yes.
And I haven't seen a movie like that in forever. You know, like Creepshow,
yeah,
had like all this like crazy lighting, or like The Howling had all this,
right,
kind of noir lighting. They were like being influenced by a lot of different things, because what we can't do in budget, we're going to do in style. And right now, a lot of the stuff is so computer fast cut, graphic or whatever, like the, not graphic like graphic violence, but like computer digital,
yeah,
things that I don't know, and I'm just like you, am I just an old man going, they don't make it like they used to, and they don't, and then maybe they can't,
but you did that's what's so cool about what you did with Creepshow, is that you I think you grabbed that. I mean, that's what I loved seeing that, because like, holy shit,
yeah,
it's, you know, maybe it's not completely lost, and I'm not just saying that because you're my guest. It's like, you did.
I think there's got to be a support behind the director. I think
right,
a lot of the times, and I don't know if you've experienced this, when you're shooting on set, especially when you're doing TV, that you're shooting the schedule and you're not shooting the script.
Oh, fuck.
And when you start, like, because I always, even when I was doing the Sarah,
wow,
Silverman program, I wanted to have every shot be inventive and things like that. And there's just no time for it. Or people,
yeah,
roll their eyes and go, they're just like, this is not helping. Nobody cares what it looks like. I heard that all the time. Nobody cares what it looks like. They just want it funny or not.
Wow.
And like, I care what it looks like. I want it to look good. And I think, like, you look at British comedy of the last like 10, 15 years, they for some reason found a way to be, have great style. Like, you look at something like Toast of London, you look at something like The Mighty Boosh, you look at something like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place or Snuffbox, they're very inventive with their shots, you know, and they are in love with that kind of filmmaking too. Like, they're big,
yeah,
horror fans over,
yeah,
there as well. Like, you know, like Matt's a big, you know, horror fan,
yeah,
and so is Richard Iowati, loves film and things like that. Matt Holness, he obviously loves that kind of stuff. So yeah, I miss that inventiveness where,
yeah,
you would be like watching, like, I think that was in vogue for a while in the 80s, and it got done so much that people were like, I just want to see something raw, which, you know, is not, I just want to see something just full on just horror. And that's when the torture porn, Eli Roth kind of stuff came in, where it's like, which is fine. You know, you can be a fan of that. But I wasn't, you know, I just like the glee wasn't there. There was an actual, here's the thing. Maybe this is, back in the 80s when they're doing like the Howling, doing Return of the Living Dead, the idea was, we want to entertain the audience. And when we start getting into the 90s, mid 90s, later on into the aughts, there is like, no, horror movies are not to be entertaining. Horror movies are to be disturbing. I want to abuse the audience.
Yes.
And it isn't until like something like Shaun of the Dead that comes out, which feels, people go, oh, that's a horror comedy. But that feels like really at home in that Evil Dead 2, Return of the Living Dead, like area. You know, it's a movie with fun characters in a horrifying situation that takes itself, the situation takes itself seriously, even if the characters' reaction to it are humorous to us. It's not to them, but it's to us. But the goal is to entertain. The goal is to entertain. And I think, like, Sam Raimi, like, was, like, asked, like, while he was working on Evil Dead 2, like, because the first Evil Dead had that rape scene with the tree, you know, which is like, people go, ugh, that's hard. Like, it was notorious, and that was shocking, and people said, do you ever regret doing that, to Sam Raimi? And he said, absolutely, I regret doing that. My job is to not offend the audience. My job is to entertain the audience, and that's. So his stuff is, I think, the pinnacle of entertainment when it comes to that era. Is like, he found a way to go, this is horrifying, but fun, but not spoofy. I think also it was his connection with the Coen brothers, because the Coen brothers, I believe they edited Evil Dead 2.
What?
I believe that. Yeah, they were working with it. If you read like the Evil Dead 2 script, there's all like these Coen brothers reference. Like,
wow.
A character goes, "He's gone blood simple," or like when they start speaking like in the deadite tongues, like they start going, "Oh, that is a Hudsucker proxy." You know, like they start dropping like these Easter eggs.
No way.
But if you look at like how the characters are acting in Evil Dead 2 and compare them to like Holly Hunter and Nicolas Cage in Raising Arizona.
That's so
crazy.
There's
a little bit of crossover with it.
Absolutely. That is a mind blower.
And if you watch like, I think Raising Arizona is really, really an amazing film, just because it has all that inventiveness with the camera.
Yeah.
And it has all that inventiveness with the language and the dialogue and the storytelling and the acting. There's just like inventiveness on top of inventiveness. And it has all of the fun stuff too that I love, but it's not a horror movie.
Right.
And like the characters are big and broad, but for some reason it doesn't feel spoofy. It feels like its own committed reality. And that's what I love about it, is like to find that sweet spot where you're not doing something that is what is considered over the top or too much or like eye roll, but it just seems like there's a glee in
the
every
glee.
In every frame of film, in every word, in every letter, in every cut, in every camera move, and every turn of the story wheel, there is a glee to it. Even like the dark times or the sad times, there's still a glee to it.
Right.
There's a unspoken contract between the filmmaker and the audience. It's like, we're going to do some scary stuff, but you're going to be fine. You know, and if it gets too scary, just look away for a second and come back.
Yeah.
And we'll join us. You know, like I watched like George Romero introducing the premiere of Day of the Dead. And he's like, okay, there's some pretty harsh stuff in this. This is pretty insane. we're very proud of this movie. You know, there's a lot of zombies in there, but we're here to have a good time. And if you see something too intense, just look away and it'll just come back. Wow. And I think like Dawn of the Dead, there's a lot of glee into it. I think Day of the Dead is a little bit more of a dirge.
Sure is.
There's still some fun stuff in there. I think that's Tom Savini's monster kid growing up, like ripping the head off, and then the vocal cords are stretched and it sounds different. That's an eighth grade boy like invention right there.
God, I forgot about that scene. That shriek. Yeah. We'll always remember that fucking shriek.
Yeah, it's just inventiveness. It's like we've seen in film somebody getting their head chopped off or taken off or whatever, but no one's ever gone, well, what if it was pulled off and wouldn't your vocal cords like get like taut and it's stupid and unrealistic, but it's like you're watching a guy draw on his notebook, you know.
I got you, man. I love the analysis, and like I feel like that gives me a little hope because it's replicatable. It doesn't have to.
Yeah, I think it really, you know, Peter Jackson used to do that with like his crazy films before he started doing like Lord of the Rings and things like that. There's a lot of inventiveness in there, and I think, you know what?
The new Suicide Squad feels like that.
Yeah. You know, there's a director that I think you should check out who I really love a lot, Steve Kostansky. He did a movie called The Void. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Wait, what's that about?
It's kind of like a John Carpenter tribute. It's like every John Carpenter movie mixed together. And it's it all takes place in a hospital where there's this kind of gateway to a void, another dimension where all like these Cthulhu-like creatures are coming in and possessing people. And it's like this cop, you know, with his estranged wife trying to figure out how to survive the night. And it's very serious. It's all practical effects. And they did it like, this is one of these Kickstarter movies, very independent. And his follow-up movie, Psycho Gorman, have you ever heard of this?
PG? Yeah, I've been wanting to see it. It looks awesome.
It's really fun, and it's really inventive, and it feels so much like the first act of it feels like, oh, this is like in the same era as Monster Squad. You know, it just has like that kind of, you know, little kids playing with monsters. But there's a lot of like, oh, that's really inappropriate gore or whatever. But, you know, the kids can handle it. The parents can't, you know, like that kind of stuff. I'm hoping he does more stuff because he comes from a very like do it yourself, just really, really a glee. He has a glee to everything that he does.
Rob, thank you for this, man. It's been so great talking to you. I got a split. I got fence shit to go deal with at the house.
Fix that fence.
Man, you are brilliant. Thank you for giving me this much time.
You're brilliant. You're brilliant.
Can you quickly tell folks about your podcast?
Oh, well, I do Schraub Home Video on Sundays around like 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, 10 Eastern Standard Time, where at schraubhomevideo.com I show like something weird. Usually I show like a clip show of just weird stuff. It started off kind of like as that everything is terrible TV carnage, kind of like look at all this dumb weird stuff, but it slowly started evolving into here's like a cool fight scene from a Shaw Brothers movie, here's like an insane like transformation scene from this horror movie from Italy or whatever, here's some animation, here's a music video. I got really inspired by Dante Fontaine would do with his like mixes. If you check his stuff out on Vimeo, Dante Fontaine, his stuff is really good. He's Hey Comet on Instagram. Always cool. Got some fun music, something interesting to look at. It's just digging into my collection and sharing it with the world.
Man, it's awesome, by the way. Y'all must join this and watch it. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, try to do something every Sunday.
Rob, thank you. That was Rob Schraub, everybody. All the links you need to find Rob are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. Thank you to our sponsors, Blue Chew and Better Help. I love y'all, and I'll see you next week. Hare Krishna.